They also say that they've not yet finalized their plans for the mine in Romania. The activists say they will continue to protest against the company's mining practices. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Maeve Conran in Boulder, Colorado.
Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica stations KPFK in Los Angeles and KPFA in Berkeley and community radio station WMNF in Tampa, Florida. Visit our website, www.fsrn.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado.
And right here in Manhattan, it's Emmanuel, and this is WBAI in New York. Time for Off the Hook. Oh, please don't. Oh, man, this machine. There we go. Every week it's something else.
So I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving. Now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse. But if they could, they would. Only bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Bundle it low.
And yes, it wouldn't be WBAI if something wasn't broken. In this particular case, you have lights that burn out, so you don't know if they're on or off. So technically, it was my mistake because I thought it was on when it wasn't, but the light burned out, so there's no way for me to know. And also, in addition to that, while we're talking about things that are broken, the internet apparently is broken as well. I'll find out if we get the internet back up. Of course, there's no point telling you that because if you're listening, you either know the internet isn't up, or you're listening on the radio, or you're listening in the future. This is Off the Hook, the program about technology and its various ins and outs and ups and downs and things like that. And we come your way every week at this time. We'll be coming your way next week at this time with a special fundraising edition, and then we won't be coming your way for the next 2 weeks after that. So mark that down on your calendar that if you want to support the show and the radio station during Off the Hook, well, that's your one and only chance next week. And this week, of course, the radio station is in mourning because we've lost our longtime friend and receptionist and air host, Fred. You might have known him as Fred Geobald. Fred Kuhn was his real name. And he's the voice that you heard if you called the radio station. And it's interesting because most radio stations, the receptionist is not somebody that you would think of as an on-air person. But at this particular place, everybody does numerous things, and Fred was certainly no exception. He was here from the 1970s, and he passed away a few days ago. So if anyone wants to call in and say anything about that, certainly the airwaves are open to that as well. Of course, anybody in the studio also is welcome to voice any memories of Fred. Basically, he was the first person you would see when you walked in most of the time. He was certainly the first person I saw when I walked in 1988. It's hard to believe the place will exist without him. Of course, we will, but it's just kind of hard to realize that.
I first heard of Fred on the air. As long-time listeners or even short-time listeners know, I used to work for the Transit Authority. And I would be working Friday nights and Saturday mornings. There was a show on that's still on called The Hour of the Wolf. It's a science fiction show. And if you know anything about radio, it's very hard to tune in when you're in the subway system. So I would move the radio around. I'd move the antenna around. And I would try to get WBAI. And BAI being the last of freeform radio, you can't really tell when you have BAI unless you recognize the voice of the person on air, or if you hit it right at the hour when somebody does a station ID. So at 5 o'clock Saturday mornings, I'd know I'd have Hour of the Wolf because I'd recognize Jim Freund's voice. But I would tune in a little early, and one weekend I turned in a little early. I got something strange. I got a sonorous voice reciting a poem. I thought this was interesting, so the next week, it turned out to be a BAI. Next week, I tuned in a little earlier, and there was folk music. And that was followed by the same poem. Okay, this is getting more interesting. Tune in the week after that a little earlier. There's an interview with a pro wrestler from the 1950s. followed by folk music, followed by this poem, which I later learned was a guy named Tully Kupferberg. After 5 weeks of tuning in 15 minutes earlier and earlier, I finally learned the host of the program was a guy named Fred Giebold. The name of the program was Light Show, and I was hooked. Now, there was nothing on this show that I particularly liked. I'm not that much into folk music. I hate wrestling. And eccentrics reading poems I can certainly do without. But Fred made it all sound not only interesting, but essential to someone. And even though it was never me that it was essential to, he had enough interest in it and presented it well enough that it was worth listening. So instead of tuning in at 5 a.m. on Saturdays, I started tuning into BAI at 3 in the morning and would listen to his show first.
Yeah, and that's how a lot of people came to know Fred, I think, by listening on the radio. But of course, anybody who called the radio station would have talked to him as well at some point along the journey. So again, if anybody wants to speak about this, it's certainly something that affects us. It makes me realize I've been listening to BAI a lot more in the last week than normal. It makes me realize how much of a family this place is, and it brings back memories of Samori when we lost him. I guess, you know, in that sense, Fred is uniting us again. Okay, we have a number of things to talk about concerning our normal subject matter. We're joined, that was the voice of Jim, by the way, that you just heard. Mike is also here, as is Redbird Arseny, Red Hacked Walter, and Bernie S. down there in Philadelphia.
Good evening.
Well, Bernie, you might be interested in this particular story. I thought of you as soon as I saw it. Police in parts of Iowa are going to start speaking English. Now, what that means is that actually effective May 1st, this supposedly happened, dispatchers are going to be switching to everyday speech in radio broadcasts. Those listening to police scanners, overhearing officers' radio messages will not hear 1033, 1010, 1016, 10 whatever. Instead, they will hear, "Send help now and have them use their lights and sirens. There is a drunken, violent, domestic argument in progress. One of the men has a knife and the woman has a gun. Send an ambulance. One person has been shot." by the way, that beep is not anything to be worried about. That's simply the update on the internet. We're back online. Welcome, everybody, on the internet. Jens has fixed the problem. Thank you very much, Jens. So, yes, the police in Iowa are going to be speaking English. Now, the 10 code was used to keep radio broadcasts brief, preventing emergency channels from getting clogged. The Federal Department of Homeland Security is urging law enforcement agencies to use plain language so multiple law enforcement, fire, and ambulance workers responding to a major emergency know exactly what is happening. When we communicate, it will be, "Hey, you, this is me. Do you hear me? Do you understand what is going on?" It's the best way to assess the needs for the circumstances. now, they say that the 10 codes weren't specific enough. According to this guy from Homeland Security, you broadcast that someone was 1032. It didn't tell you if the guy had a knife, a gun, a tire iron, or a baseball bat. I have been a proponent of clear language for 15 years. I don't know. Bernie, what do you think about this?
I think this guy in Homeland Security has never operated on a two-way radio system in emergency situations before. All this is really being done in the name of interoperability, which is just a Homeland Security buzzword for all agencies being able to communicate readily, which was obviously a problem in 911, but more from equipment problems than from humans not being able to speak to each other. So as more and more public service, public safety radio systems are being linked up for emergencies to be able to communicate different agencies together, they're realizing that there's all these different 10 codes out there. There's different groups of 10 codes. Like what one city might use as their group list of 10 codes will differ from another city's 10 codes.
Yeah, I don't understand how that came to be.
It just was stupidity, frankly. There was no standard. There's no national standardized 10 codes. And 10 codes can be very, very effective. And they can be used in conjunction with English language very effectively. So I think this is really a bad idea. But frankly, for people thinking, oh, yes, I'll be able to understand what they're saying now if I'm listening to them on my police scanner, the downside is more and more public safety agencies are switching to digital and digitally encrypted two-way radio systems. So you won't be able to hear them anyway, no matter what kind of a police scanner you have, because it'll all be digital noise. And so it's kind of a mixed bag, and I just think it's kind of a stupid idea, frankly.
So you think it's a bad idea?
Yeah, I don't really think it serves that much of a purpose. If you're talking to another agency, then you don't have to use the 10 codes.
Would you say it would lead to as much of a disaster as, say, 1054?
I don't remember the 1054 code.
You don't know a 1054? Bernie, a 1054 is livestock on the highway.
Oh. Now,
that's something that definitely is not a good thing. And, you know, I would say that it sounds to me like you believe this would be about as bad as that.
Why 10?
Why 10? Why not 9? Why not 1? Why not nothing? Why not just say 4 or 54 or whatever? Does anybody know?
No one knows.
Well, with 4 or 54, you have the problem that someone hearing part of the message or hearing it unclearly may interpret that as a number unto itself. You're giving an address.
All right, fair enough. Then let's put a letter there. Why not the letter A or something, like A-OK? You know, that works. You know,
that would probably be workable, yeah. A-13, A-54.
Red Hect?
Accomplishes the same thing as putting a 10 there. It's really arbitrary. Someone probably just picked 10 as a nice-sounding word.
Except that, you know, it makes a little more sense because A is the first letter of the alphabet and you just want to pick something. I don't know where 10 came from.
Well, you know that whatever follows the 10 is the code you should be listening for. It gives you an extra syllable to get ready to hear the number following it.
You know, now that you mention it, criminals use 12. I'd never thought of that. You don't know about that, do you? Criminals have their own little 12 codes, they call it. And, well, if you're on a job, you'll use those codes to communicate so that the cops can't figure it out if they overhear it.
And for years, for decades and decades, amateur radio operators or ham radio operators have used Q codes, like QRP means who was calling me. And these were useful because back in the day, hams mostly communicated using Morse code or CW, and it was much easier to abbreviate QRP or QSY means change to another frequency.
QSL.
QSL, like, to verify a contact. There's a bunch of Q codes. And it's odd because a lot of hams, when voice became popular, telephony, after Morse code started falling out of favor, a lot of hams still used Q codes verbally over the air when they were speaking. So, there's some QRM, meaning there's some interference, or QRN, like as in QR Nancy, which is intentional interference. So a lot of hams I hear on the air will verbally say their Q codes. But those are standardized throughout the whole world. Why the police haven't managed to do that in this country is beyond me.
I think it's hardly news that the hams are more competent than the police in a lot of instances.
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised. But I'm sure this is a discussion that we can continue to have at Dayton, the Dayton Hamvention coming up in however many weeks is that, Bernie?
That's the week after next.
Is it the week after next?
Week after next, it's creeping up on us.
It's jumping at us. My goodness. Okay, well, we'll be attempting to get the 2600 van to go out there again, and hopefully we'll see a lot of old friends. It's always an interesting occasion out there.
And for anyone interested, they can go to hamvention.org for more information about the Dayton Hamvention, which is really a gathering of about 30,000 people interested in communications technologies and hacking hardware. It's not just hams, but it's a lot of computer people, but it's more about experimenting with communications technologies, and it's a lot of fun.
And it's a great chance to get a radio and get your license.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true, and spend a lot of money if you want to do that as well. But you can also sell things, too, if you get a permit as a flea person to do that, which is pretty easy to do. Okay, very interesting stories out of Italy. You may have heard of the military investigation. That there's two different military investigations into the death of the Italian agent that was involved in the transportation of a released hostage who was shot to death by U.S. troops. The United States released a report last week exonerating the people who shot the Italian agent. The Italian military
shot
or Italian
the hostage too.
Italian they shot the hostage, but they didn't kill the hostage.
Right?
Yeah, definitely. Wasn't a good thing. The Italian authorities released their version of the report strikingly different, causing all kinds of problems. But here's the interesting thing. apparently the U.S. military in all of their the same amount of competence that they used at the checkpoint, the so-called checkpoint in Iraq, they managed to release a classified document onto the internet concerning this. Now, it's actually not a classified document, but it's one of those declassified. In fact, it says unclassified on every page, but they have that black marking throughout all the just about all the words.
Redacted,
yeah. Now, they released this as a PDF. Now, I think a lot of us know where this is going. All you had to do was copy and paste from the PDF, and you could read everything that was underneath the blacked out bits as well. Now, an Italian newspaper has posted the document. However, I couldn't get it to work. So maybe they posted something that has been solidified where you can't copy and paste. I don't know. I made it into a tiny URL, so it's very easy for people to get to. tinyurl.com/9mmary, X as in whatever, TK, 9mxtk. So check that out, and you'll see all the black bars. If somebody knows another site that does work, in case this one doesn't work at all, please let me know.
X standing, of course, for X-ray.
Yeah, right, definitely. Also coming out of Italy, this is also very interesting. Rome judicial authorities have sought a temporary injunction against an internet site which carried doctored photographs of Pope Benedict dressed in a Nazi uniform. The crude photomontages of the head of former German Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger on the body of a man wearing a swastika armband and standing in front of a Nazi flag were posted 10 days ago on the Italian branch of the international news and opinion site Independent Media Center. Rome investigating magistrate Salvatore Vitello said in a statement the pictures violated a national law prohibiting defamation of the Catholic Church. Didn't know about that one, did you? Yeah, you can't defame the Catholic Church. very interesting.
Frankly, I think the Catholic Church does often a good enough job at defaming itself.
See, I don't think you could say that over there.
Well, I'm not over there. If you're in Italy, don't listen to what I say about that.
Well, yeah, but already you've transmitted it to Italy, so I think you might be getting something in the mail. Vitello said he was also considering taking action against the owners of the site for insulting the authority and honor of the Pope himself, the ex-Nazi Pope, by the way. I can say that because it's true. He is an ex-Nazi. I mean, you know, I didn't say he went around killing people, but he was part of the you know, he was indoctrinated into it.
We're going to get mail.
Ex-Nazi Pope.
That
no
may
question.
Not be accurate, actually.
Well, that's what they say.
No, he was a member of the Hitler Youth.
That makes you a Nazi, I think.
He may not have joined the party.
Well,
I'm not,
you know,
splitting hairs. This is what
I think
the U.S.
you might
government
be, because somebody who's a member of the Hitler Youth is pretty much gets a free pass to the Nazi Party, you know.
He ran away when he was drafted.
You kind of have to
army.
Understand that it's not really too much of an option when you're in that kind of a situation.
Maybe not, but, you know, it's also hard to excuse the kind of things that went on. I mean, there were millions and millions of people who were called Nazis, and none of them got a free pass. I'm just saying, you know, this guy was... You know, one of them, however bad or however nice they were. So let's not give them any special treatment like they're doing over
noted,
there.
Emmanuel.
Sorry, what?
It should be noted that
yes.
Participation in Hitler Youth was mandatory for young boys in Nazi Germany. It wasn't something you had a choice about.
Yeah, I'm not saying he had a choice about it. I'm saying a lot of people there had no choice. These millions and millions of Nazis didn't just suddenly fall out of the sky. It was part of a horrible culture that indoctrinated people and forced them to join up. Yes, but they are Nazis. I mean, they've always. I mean, if we're going to redefine it, then we should start with everybody, not just the Pope. You know, were these people intimidated into joining and doing horrible things? Are they really Nazis then? I don't know. It's another discussion.
Regardless of that, this story itself is kind of bizarre because...
About the ex-Nazi Pope?
Well, the story about these, like, they were really stupid photographs. I went to look at them. They were, as it says in the story,
yeah, they were
crude photo
montages. They were crude, all right. Definitely crude.
but in the media, Italy learned about this investigation from the AP story. They were never told.
Oh, really?
Which is mildly bizarre.
It's mildly the way things tend to go with this kind of thing. So the Italian arm of the Independent Media Center, whose site is a forum for hundreds of contributors around the world on issues ranging from anti-globalization to gay rights, could not be reached for comment. And I should also point out they've been under a denial of service attack since May 1st. So, yeah, it's madness out there. By the way, was that something that was posted by just a contributor or by somebody who was part of IMC? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
It just, you can just go and look at these stupid photographs.
If you can get to it.
I think you still can. I don't know.
It was very difficult earlier today.
Oh.
Let's see. There's another story about a Republican National Convention arrest being undercut by a videotape. Yeah, it turns out that Eliza Wyka was arrested during the RNC. She was somebody who was simply walking up the Avenue of Americas to Herald Square. She was arrested by cops who were sweeping up anyone on two wheels. She wanted to be unconditionally exonerated, so she kept coming back to court, and her trial was due to begin earlier this week. But last week, however, she had second thoughts, and she decided that she just wanted to put an end to all the court appearances and agree to an ACLD. However, when her lawyer called the assistant prosecutor last week, he learned there would not be a trial this week. The reason, a videotape had turned up showing that Ms. Wyka had not been riding with the teacher that she was arrested with and accused of collaborating with. Moreover, charges had already been dropped against that other person. So earlier this week, prosecutors also moved to dismiss the case against her and attach no strings. A spokeswoman for the Manhattan District Attorney said the video cast doubt on whether the incident happened the way the officer said. How many times are we going to be hearing this? It's just unbelievable, the lies that have been so badly perpetrated, too. But here's the saddest part of it all. Ms. Wyka said she will not go to the police warehouse to retrieve the bicycle seized that day. She says it's an object that has been violated. I can understand wanting to avoid these people at all costs, but for God's sake, send somebody down there, donate it to somebody. Don't let the cops keep it, because they'll just steal it and do something with it that they shouldn't be able to do. Okay, enough about that. People, please, you can stop sending us emails telling us that smart cars are coming to the United States. We've seen that press release 100,000 times now. And yes, we know there's a company called Zap Cars in California that is working on importing them. However, I'm not convinced that it's going to be anytime soon. I'm not convinced that it's going to be anything remotely affordable. The one time I talked to them, I was talking to a very high-pressure salesperson who wanted me to make a down payment right then and there, but they could give me no date as to when a smart car would actually be in this country. And, you know, if you go to their website, there still isn't any information about that, so you don't know if it's going to be next year or this year or 2 years. But zapworld.com is their website for information about that. There was also a story in Wired that everybody's sending us links to as well, with a lot of inaccuracies. I'd really rather not get into it right now. So far, Canada still is the closest country to us, and Mexico, too, that have these things.
Just want to say again, we want to thank all the people for the stories.
Yes.
But we got them already.
We got them many, many, many times. Yes. But we're still working on options and figuring things out. Okay, this is an interesting story that might appeal to some of our French listeners. Snapping a picture of the Eiffel Tower by day or snapping one by night, there may be a big difference. Every night, when the Eiffel Tower is lit and made visible for miles around, it leaps into the private domain. It becomes a registered trademark. That's right. SNTE, the semi-private company that manages the tower for Paris, allows the press and postcard makers to use the image for free. But movie makers, advertisers, and others seeking to use the tower's image for commercial use pay a guest appearance in evening dress. I didn't write this. Prices vary based on medium and length of run. SNTE official Stéphane Dieu said the firm charges 15,000 euros for commercials that run for a year on French television, and possibly more for a worldwide campaign. Print advertisers are charged between 500 and 5,000 euros. He wouldn't say which advertisers have paid, but the company says the trademark's primary purpose is to protect the tower's image, not make megabucks. It's kind of hard to believe that, you know, that you can actually say you're not allowed to take a picture of this unless you pay money, you know, for commercial use, whatever that might mean.
You can say whatever you want. The question is, if someone refused to pay, what would happen?
What would happen if a picture of the Eiffel Tower showed up in the front cover of 2600? I mean, it's commercial. We do sell it. Do we have to pay now every building that shows up in a picture on our magazine?
I think you should go for a photo montage, the Eiffel Tower and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland.
Why, are they pulling the same thing?
They've pulled the same thing for a number of years. They've barred people from taking the photo and using it in even non-commercial ways.
It's in Cleveland. They should be happy anybody takes pictures of anything there.
Yeah.
No offense.
You know, if you took enough of these pictures and made the photo montage, then you could claim that the commentary is on the trademark law, and it would almost certainly be fair use.
I like that even better.
Well, I just think,
How about a photograph of the Eiffel Tower on the cover of 2600 with Rebel bungee jumping off the top of the Eiffel Tower?
You know, I'd pay the airfare for that.
Now we're getting into fantasy, enjoyable fantasy.
I'd even pay for a used bungee cord. But please, if you're over there, take as many pictures as you want. Distribute them as much as you want. This kind of stuff cannot stand.
Well, you're not a commercial entity.
But, you know, how do you define what a commercial entity is? If you are on the internet and you charge somebody a subscription rate to see a picture of the Eiffel Tower, you know, or if you have it up in your restaurant or something like that, or if you sell T-shirts with pictures of the Eiffel Tower, I don't know. There's all kinds of things you can do.
My one suggestion if you're visiting the Eiffel Tower, though, is bring lots of extra film if you plan to take pictures from the top, because that's where they'll get all the individuals.
Yeah, and if you want to take pictures from the top, be prepared to wait for like an hour online,
too.
That, too. All right. A couple other interesting things. A lot of people wrote in with this story as well. Spurred by the killing of a 9-year-old girl, Governor Jeb Bush Monday signed a law imposing tougher penalties on child molesters and requiring many of those released from prison to wear satellite tracking devices for the rest of their lives. Well, this could be very interesting because it seems that when things like this are imposed, they're imposed on the worst people first, but then they're expanded to more people, and before you know it, every school kid in the nation has a GPS device on their book bag or on their person or something like that. Bernie, where do you see this going?
Well, it's just like you said. I mean, these things usually when the most outrageous violations of basic rights typically are attested on the most hated groups of society, and then when society goes along with that, and it's another group that's not liked so much, and nobody wants to stand, you know, not many people want to stand up to vouch for the rights of this undesirable group. So it just sort of sneaks its way up into society, and frankly, it scares me that there's going to be individuals forced to wear government tracking devices for the rest of their lives. That's just a very bizarre and scary thought in my mind, and I don't think it's going to stop here.
Well, an enormous privacy violation already exists with Megan's Law, where you can look up online any registered sex offenders, which is a requirement now, I think, in your town, get a picture, get an address, get an apartment number, get all sorts of very private information about the people, date of birth. And
then wonder why that person is under constant attack, which is for somebody who has served time, supposedly has been released because he has paid his debt to society. It just seems bizarre to continue to punish them in such an open setting.
This can all be topped in a much lower-tech way. You can argue that once you've paid your time, you've served your debt to society. And yes, in Florida, they want to track you, and they want to keep you in most states away from schools and whatever. But in New Jersey, they're going to expand the area that you can't go into to the point where it's going to apparently be impossible to actually live in certain communities. And I can see this getting ridiculous to the point of you move away from a community, you move away from schools and such, any place where children may be, and if they build something there, you'll have to move again. It's like being caned and being hounded.
It makes it very difficult to recover from, you've committed your crime, you've paid your debt, and you want to move on with your life. But, everybody can see this information, and it makes it very difficult to get on and improve your image.
I ran into this this very type of situation when I was in the federal prison several years ago. And I had a bunch of other cellmates and people that would show me their charges, their indictments. And because a lot of people couldn't read in prison, and there were a lot of people that just couldn't read their indictments. So they would give them to me, and without exception, everyone who was charged with a drug crime, whether it was just mere possession or dealing on the corner or whatever, without exception, every single federal indictment I saw had an additional charge on there for possessing or distributing the drugs within 1,000 feet of the school. because all these guys were arrested in a city, and every major city in the country, you can't be away more than 1,000 feet away from a school, because the feds classify a school as like a church that might have a Sunday school, all kinds of different, like any kind of anything that's remotely related to education, and even just vacant lots they found have been classified as schools. So just as a general rule, they just throw this thing in there.
Some of my best schooling has come in vacant lots.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you're going to see when laws start being, more laws like that start being enacted where it keeps certain people away from, say, a school or something like that, it's really in effect saying, you can't be anywhere in this city or anywhere in this state, and it's going to be challenged constitutionally. It'll be interesting to see where it goes.
How does one take the subway when you have a GPS device on you?
I don't think it says you can't go into a tunnel or anything. It just says that you have to wear the thing. So, you know, so it brings up issues like, why, you know, people wearing these things, if they don't want to be tracked, they could just, and a lot of times you're going to have it under your pant legs, as Martha Stewart showed this week, and you know, she's wearing her gold LeMay hoof covers, and she had her bracelet her ankle bracelet under her pants. She said she wasn't going to show it to anybody, though. But she could have tinfoil wrapped around the bracelet under her pants, and nobody would have known, and it would have shielded the device from picking up or emitting its signal. So, you know, there's all kinds of measures to defeat these things anyway.
All right, no doubt something that we'll be encountering much in the future. This is interesting, too. Some cities are creating their own intelligence units to get the law enforcement information they want when they want it. And it looks like New York has an intelligence division. That's what they call it, the intelligence division, which was started after September 11th and is housed in a secret location in the city.
This is, by the way, almost certainly a misnomer.
Is it a misnomer?
I'm almost certain there is very little intelligence in this department.
Oh, but this is intelligence with a capital I. So I think they have that trademarked. But in any event, New York City's intelligence division is hiding someplace in the city, and we're offering a prize here at Off the Hook to the first person who can find it and let us know where it is. Apparently, hiding is the best way to thwart a terrorist attack. You know, that's something I think we can all take to heart.
So you're seeking intelligence on the intelligence department?
Well, something like that. Yeah, I'm seeking okay. Just a bit of information. Bernie, does it sound plausible to you that something like that would be hiding?
It's just the old bad idea of security through obscurity.
Yeah, exactly. How about security through no security at all? You know, making people think that something exists when it doesn't really.
Security through intimidation is a great tactic, actually.
Yeah, well, that's traditional.
Well, it could be a hoax. It could be there is no intelligence department.
That's what I think.
Much intelligence. Yeah, exactly.
Just telling people it exists. You know, it'd save a lot of money, save people time.
That would be more intelligent.
All right. Again, you can write to us at our email mailing address, which is oth@2600.com, or you can write to us using the United States Postal Service, God help you, Off the Hook. You ready, Walter?
All right.
Okay. Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street.
10th floor.
New York, New York.
10005.
Much better.
All right.
Much better this week. All right.
Thank you.
It's the little triumphs that really matter so much.
I have a little tidbit.
Go ahead.
There's a new casino in Las Vegas, Wynn Las Vegas, created and named for Steve Wynn. And the interesting thing about it is
it's
that
a great name to have. You're running a casino.
WYNN. It's his real name. But the interesting thing is that the chips have chips, the casino chips, the poker chips, the gaming chips, as they're called, contain RFID chips, so you can track their progress through the casino.
And I hear they're edible as well, making them
that's something else.
Three time chips,
This had been done with larger devices some years ago for $1,000, $10,000 chips. Because you don't want them being stolen and then cashed in. But now it's pretty much every chip in the casino.
Fascinating.
Interesting.
A lot of people wrote in to give us answers. A couple of weeks ago, we were trying to figure out what the countdown clock was in Union Square. We figured out it was counting down to the announcement of whether or not New York City gets the Olympics, July 6, 7 a.m., And at that time, when New York does not get the Olympics, there will be celebrations in the street, and apparently that's what they'll be focusing on. But some people wrote in to tell us other things that July 6th also stands for. Did you know that July 6th is George W. Bush's birthday?
Yeah.
Now, I'm a little worried about that because, you know, with all the corruption in the Olympics and all the corruption in the U.S., it seems like the two might have been, like, you know, merged together to have, like, a nice present for George W. Bush on that special day.
It would be the Olympics in France, I think. Would be an excellent present for anyone.
Well, I agree, except July 6th isn't, you know, anybody's birthday over there, at least not anybody who's in power.
No. It would be a great gift to America if the Olympics were held in France.
Also, in 1785, on July 6th, the U.S. officially adopted the dollar. So, you know, it seems like kind of a significant day. And I'm a little worried.
I think any day can be a significant day if you research it enough.
Yeah, but George W. Bush's birthday, that's pretty damn significant.
You've been reading the Illuminati trilogy again, haven't you?
Just two of them. We've got this quote here, which I think, Bernie, you might have forwarded to the list, and a number of people actually have sent this in. This is the famous Tom DeLay quote. I'm sure we've all heard it by now, but I haven't said it yet out loud. We've got Justice Kennedy writing decisions based upon international law, not the Constitution of the United States. And I guess that's proof that we're completely at odds with the rest of the world. That's just outrageous. And not only that, but he said in session that he does his own research on the Internet. That is just incredibly outrageous. Wow. I mean, what do you say to somebody like this? I mean, yeah, I know the Internet is filled with fallacies and things like that, but that's not how this is coming off at all.
I, for one, am outraged.
Are you incredibly outraged?
No, just outraged.
Which are you more outraged at, the international law part or the Internet part?
Tom DeLay.
I'm outraged he's basing decisions on the Dancing Baby video.
On the what?
The Dancing Baby video.
I don't think that's what anybody's accusing him of doing.
Oh, it isn't?
I don't think so.
Oh, well,
not
okay.
Yet, anyway.
My respect has gone up.
Most lawyers, I have to say that most lawyers in the country now do their legal research on the Internet because there's a lot of services online. You can look up, you know, case law and statutes at thomas.gov and so forth, and it's just commonplace. Tom DeLay clearly is out of the loop and is just completely ignorant about how judges and lawyers do legal research because it's commonplace. It's not incredibly outrageous.
I remember doing some legal work for someone else not in this room on LexisNexis, which isn't quite the Internet.
It is now.
Oh, okay.
Now you access it through the Internet.
No.
Back in the day.
I'm sure the judge just goes to Google and types in international law to find out what he needs.
Yeah. All right. Let's look at a couple pieces of listener mail. Let me take some phone calls, 212-209-2900. On your recent show, you claimed a person would be committing a felony merely by possessing a recording device, such as a movie-capable cell phone, in a movie theater. This is not true. You could have checked Thomas online to see the actual text of the bill so you could report things more accurately. Here is an excerpt. The possession by a person of an audio-visual recording device in a motion picture exhibition facility may be considered as evidence in any proceeding to determine whether that person committed an offense under this subsection, but shall not by itself be sufficient to support a conviction of that person for such offense. Signed, Eric.
Oh, that's really...
I stand corrected.
That's really Justice Kennedy that sent that.
No, it wasn't Justice Kennedy. It was one of our listeners.
Sure?
And maybe Justice Kennedy listens to us as well. But yes, we all stand corrected on that because occasionally we do get it wrong, and I guess we just jumped the gun on that one.
But we were close. And the reason I say we're close is because I said it was mere possession of a video recording device. That alone is not enough. There also has to be an attempt to use it to record the motion picture. And attempt is one of those vague kind of words that, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean you did it, you know? So, and who's to say whether you actually tried to do it? I mean, it just throws this whole, this vague, just nebulous pall over the law, and it really means anybody who has a video recording device could be charged and could be convicted. And it's going to be interesting to see where this goes, because I'd like to see who the first person is.
Okay. Someone else wrote in as we were trying to figure out the date with the countdown clock. I can't believe you guys had such a problem figuring out the numbers of days in a month. There is a quick trick which never failed anybody. Make a fist of your left hand with the back of your hand facing you. Point with the index finger of the other hand to the first knuckle on the left. That's the location for January. Move your index finger a little to the right between the two knuckles. That's the location for February. Move your index finger again a little to the right on top of the second knuckle. That's the location for March. And so on until you are at July at the fourth knuckle. The knuckles represent months with 31 days. The spaces between the knuckles, which are a little bit lower, represent the months with 30 days. Ignore February with 28/29 days. It's less than 31 days. Now, what about the rest of the months? Just continue with the right hand. Make a fist there, back of the hand pointing to you, and point to the first knuckle. August, also 31 days. Then the gap for September with 30 days. The knuckle for October, 31 days, etc. Stop once you have reached December. Very easy to learn. Very easy to remember. Signed, Edwin. Well, Edwin, yes, you're right about that. It is easy to figure that out. But what was hard for us was counting the days when you're in the middle of a month. And calculating, well, there's 14 days left in this month, and then we have to add 31 on top of that. And
you're not making this any better.
No, I'm not, or Edwin isn't.
You aren't. It's addition.
Well, yeah, it's addition. I know, but that's addition is difficult.
We were fools. We apologize. Leave it at that.
Listen, nobody got it in less than 5 minutes here.
But we were right, at least.
We were right. It's good to do your research and do it slowly and carefully than to speed up and make mistakes. Dear Off the Hook, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the runaway bride from Georgia.
Oh, I have no thoughts on the runaway bride from Georgia.
No, actually, this is kind of interesting. He raises a couple of interesting points here, but God, the front page everywhere. Oh. Okay. In particular, I'm concerned about people, private citizens so far, not lawmakers who say that she should have to repay the cost to the police forces to search for her. Now, granted, she later violated the law when she claimed she was abducted, but at that point, most of the money in overtime, etc., was already spent. She, like the rest of us, has the right to travel in this country at her own will and doesn't have to tell anyone where she is going. But I could see this ending up as a law that individuals are not allowed to travel without notifying others or something like that. Am I just paranoid? I hope so. I also find it interesting that she was able to travel by Greyhound under a false name. I figured she would need to show an ID to get on the bus, just like every other place in the country. She also seemed smart in that she didn't use credit cards or anything. She just took cash. Signed, Chuck in Maryland.
Hallelujah and hallelujah, Chuck. Hallelujah for two things. The first thing is, yes, she did not have to tell anybody where she was going. It was boorish. It was ill-conceived. It was foolish. It was sad. But it wasn't illegal. And no, I don't think that she should have to pay for reimbursement for everybody who jumped the gun and started searching for her not dead, not kidnapped body.
She said she was kidnapped.
Well, she said that afterwards.
The searching goes on after her fiancé says she went out for a jog, she hasn't come back. Goes on for a couple of days. After the search is ended, she's in Albuquerque at this point, and she calls up and says, I've been kidnapped. That's a lie. Now, what's interesting is that there's a Hispanic group that's up in arms because she said, I was kidnapped by a Hispanic man. What's interesting is she also said she was kidnapped by a white woman. There's no white woman's group up in arms over that. Interesting. The other thing that I go hallelujah over is hallelujah that you can get on a Greyhound bus and you don't have to show ID. I mean, I'd hate to think that
country... Well, I'll bet that's been ruined now. I bet everyone's got to show ID because you might be kidnapping yourself.
I'd begin to worry about that, too. But, yeah, thank God we don't have internal passports like Soviet Russia and Nazi Germany that we can go cross-country and not have to show ID. I mean, it's
become... Give it time, Jim. Give it time.
It's become almost impossible to do anything similar on an airplane, but at least you've got buses. After buses are taken away, you either have to have a car or you're going to have to bicycle.
Well, you have to show ID on a train now, so why not buses? They'll do it to buses.
You don't have to show ID on a train.
Well, they claim you do. They claim you do.
Right after 911, I went to the Greyhound bus station here in Philadelphia, and I stood by a bus, and I watched people being asked to show ID. Now, that they haven't stuck with that policy, and, you know, people sort of calmed down after 911. But it has been implemented at various times by Greyhound and other bus companies, probably. So, right now, I guess people, the yellow, whatever alert level we're on, what color are we on now?
You know, no one talks about that anymore. I have no idea what color we are. Oh, my God.
Uh-oh.
I must be living in
it's
danger.
It's probably still yellow.
But well, not
and orange
no,
in New York.
New York is orange, I believe.
We should go to Homeland
Forever.
Security and look it up.
I'm not going there. I'm banned from that site.
But on this ID thing, having a show ID, our listeners should be aware that the congressional passage of the Real ID Act is all but a done deal now. The House and Senate conferees have agreed include the language in an appropriations bill that's all but certain to pass. So if you go to ACLU.org, you can read why this real ID is a real bad idea. It's not going to provide any more safety, but it's going to allow people to be tracked much more readily, and it's going to allow a lot of personal information that's on your real ID, which is going to be federal ID everybody's going to have to carry if they want to drive a car. That information will be easily available, more information than there is now, like biometrics, to any merchant or store where your driver's license is given. Like you go to a bar and they swipe your driver's license to make sure you're 21, whatever. Mm-hmm. All that information, biometrics and all that, can be sucked out of that card. So be aware of the Real ID Act and how it's going to pass.
We'll see what happens with that. All right, let's take some phone calls.
That's going to suck for 18-year-old college kids in the future.
As if everything else doesn't already, but all right, good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, one thing about ID on trains and one thing about New York City intelligence. I went to Baltimore on the Amtrak. I didn't have to show ID. I paid cash and all.
Okay.
And they say that they have random ID checks, but the conductor didn't take any ID. But anyway, also about the intelligence, to correct you, New York City Police Department does have an intelligence unit, and it was started actually way before the fall. My uncle works for the police department.
All right, Rebel, where are they?
Well, I don't know where they are.
Well, that's the point. We don't know where they are. They could have fallen and can't get up or something. We don't know. We want to know where they are.
They could have been kidnapped.
Like, yeah.
They were started in the late 90s. Because if you used to look on the police cars, it'll say, like, now how it says the precinct where it's from, it'll say Intel on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the intelligence. This was at City Hall.
I thought they were just powered by Intel. I guess, no, I had that all wrong. All right. Well, thanks for the info, Rebel. We're going to move on to another phone call here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, I don't know if you know that there is a new religion. It's called Fred Kuhnism. And that's because, actually, on the Good Life Board, an uncle changes his name.
Do you have something to say about Fred?
Yes, I enjoy his programs often. But if you watch wrestling, professional wrestling, it's a lot different than the entertainment about professional wrestling that he entertained on his program with his associate.
Of course, so, yeah.
I just want to go further and say that his voice will be remembered forever as long as the phone number of the studio and the switchboard message is. And that is, it should have been 209 or 208-2900 and so forth.
No, it's 209-2800.
2800.
And I know you have a big issue with people saying 209-2800. And I just can't believe that's all we're going to be talking about. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Oh, you guys do a great program. I've been listening to you for years, and actually it was at one time my subscription to 2600 lapsed.
Oh, dear.
Just about police intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
The first New York police intelligence was called the Red Squad, and it began in the 20s. The last legal disbanding, because William Kunstler sued because Rudolph Giuliani was involved with the Red Squad, and I'm quite sure other people will correct my history because it's just for remembrance. I don't have it up online. But there was a case called the New York 8 that involved Red Squad in improprieties. The New York 8 was all acquitted, but they spent many years trying to defend themselves. After the Red Squad was disbanded, it became euphemistically called the Black Desk under Commissioner Ward, and he used that as a tongue-in-cheek example of police intelligence, surveilling CISPES, the other progressive activity communities, activist communities. And so there's never been not a time that police instruments in this country have not investigated those who stood up for our Constitution and our legal rights to protest. So I thanks for the – keep up the good work, and okay. Someone else will call it add something else.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for the info. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, starting in November – the Taxi and Limousine Commission will require all taxi cabs to carry credit card swipes and GPS units. So I wanted to ask you what you thought of that.
Are these the kind of GPS units that simply allow you not to get lost, or are these the kind that actually track the cars?
They, I believe, will track the cars. And I heard this on WNYC today, so they probably have more on it on their website. Some of, given the ethnic makeup of cab drivers, some people have had some concerns about this.
Well, regardless of ethnic makeup, I would have a lot of concerns over being tracked if that's in fact what is going on. Certainly something we'll be looking into more. I know that Google had a service, kind of a useless service, where you could track limousines in various parts of the city. But this sounds like something that is the next natural progression to that. I'm sure that you could do it for buses and, you know, useful purposes such as, well, where is it? When's the next one going to show up? Things like that. But also, yeah, for more nefarious purposes as well.
Well, there's no difference between this and, for example, swiping your credit card at a stationary location at, you know, a store or anything, or being tracked where you go via the MetroCard. If you buy it with a credit card, they have your serial number linked to that. So, I mean...
Well, the credit card part, yes, I agree. But sure. I think the caller is saying there's something else in addition to that.
Well, the GPS, but then if you paid with cash, how would they know who you are?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking more from the point of view of the cab driver himself.
Yeah, supposedly the idea is that if the cabbie gets hijacked, waylaid, robbed, stabbed, burnt, shot, whatever, they'll be able to find him.
Well, yeah, okay. I don't think it was ever a problem finding people who have been victims of crimes. But, all right, well, interesting thing to keep an eye on. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air. All right. Enough of that. Let's try this one. Good evening. You're on the air. All right. Well, this is a slight improvement. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was wanting to get on the show.
You're on the show right now.
Oh, am I?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Go ahead.
Can you go to this website, Emmanuel?
Not right now. It's kind of out of my reach, but why don't you tell us what it is and tell us why we should go there?
Well, it's a fantastic website. It's www.hack4jes.us.
Okay, hack for Jesus. I get
hack
it.
For Jesus.
So
yeah,
what do we get for hacking for Jesus?
Basically, it's a war on the security industry as a whole and everything about it.
Uh huh. So is it coming from the religious right?
No, actually, the anarchist middle.
Really? Okay.
Absolutely. We hate your publication.
Well, that's always good to hear from organizations like that.
And you're being hypocritical by mentioning Jesus in connection with your hacking, right?
And they're using a .us domain in a clever way.
That is clever.
Not the manner in which it was intended, but God bless you, sir. Good Lord. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, great. Thanks. yeah, hi. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I had been emailing a lot of people last year. You know, I'm a BAI listener, kind of an activist, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I had an email list of about 150 people. And I got tossed off AOL for spamming.
Really?
Yeah. They gave me a couple of notices. And, you know, I questioned, you know, why is this happening? My people that, you know, I email to want my email. This is not unsolicited. If people tell me, you know, I don't really want to get any more email. I took them off the list, and I was doing this for, you know, at least a year or so. Mm-hmm.
Well, if somebody complains and is rather, you know, a pain in the ass about it, they can get innocent people thrown off many things.
Most likely that's what happens.
Yeah.
AOL has, I've heard, criteria where if you send a certain number of emails, they assume you're spamming.
Go ahead, try it. Pick a random person on AOL and just complain about them to AOL and see if you can get them thrown off. I'll bet you can.
The thing was, I had called a couple of times and I said, what is the criteria? How many emails am I allowed to send? And somebody said, 25. And then another time somebody said, usually there's a five-minute rule. As long as you don't do, you know, too many within a five-minute period, it won't activate this thing or whatever. And then they would tell me on the phone, we have here that you sent 800 emails in a period of about 10 minutes or something. Because I would forward something, you know, and it would be to the list, and it would be, you know, so I would have a record of, you know, 300 or 400 emails sent.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know anybody who complained, and I don't really think it's based upon complaint. I think it I don't know what it's based on, but it seemed like my question was, what is the criteria and what is the recourse that I have as a person now who's been banned from AOL? I'm on Juno, so, you know, I'm like...
Okay, we're going to have to answer this question.
It differs by company. I mean, you can't really put a blanket requirement over it, but your best bet is probably to register your own domain and find a... a hosting service which doesn't limit your outbound emails.
Yeah, AOL is not the best thing to use as far as anything involving justice or freedom. Speaking of which, though, very quickly, because we're running out of time, we got this bit of email in. Somebody noticed something on anonymizer.com. Yeah, I've been listening to the show here in Illinois via the MP3 download for several years. And I had the strange experience of hearing my email sent over the read over the airwaves. Strange because I download the show, listen to it when I want to on an MP3 player, email out my thought, you read it over the air and stream it to the ends of the earth. I download it a couple weeks later and unexpectedly hear my words read by Emmanuel. That is strange. And I can imagine what this is doing to you right now, me talking about this. But anyway, I noticed that if I use the free service for proxy browsing at anonymizer.com, certain website addresses, real and non-existent, are blocked. No, I'm not trying to view porn sites. I'm talking about any word or words encompassing free or hack. For example, any use of freedom will be blocked, like freedomdowntime.com or hack, any hacking site. Both return the same message from anonymizer.com saying that they are blocked. It's very interesting. I tried this before the show, and sure enough, Freedom Downtime is blocked. 2600.com is not. So I don't know what there is to this. I don't know why such things will be blocked in that manner. But anonymizer.com is doing something kind of strange.
Maybe they just want people to have a positive experience on anonymizer.com, and so they block the word down.
Okay. Maybe that's it. Well, we're going to look into this a little bit more and see. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for calling in and for writing in, and remind you that we have our fundraiser scheduled for next week at this time from 7 to 8, and then we're off for the next couple of weeks after that. So please show your support on this radio program for this. I'm sorry, Mike. What?
Work overtime this week, so you'll have more money to donate next week.
Exactly. Also, don't forget we have 2600 meetings this Friday as well. A few last words in memory of Fred. Of course, this is a very sad occasion for many of us here. Almost all of us over the years here at the radio station have met Fred at one time or another, and he was so much more than a receptionist. And for those of you who called in and would speak to him live when you called 209-2900, or 2800 rather, and listen to him live, he would always answer the phone very, very kind of quickly, like, you know, WBAI, like really fast. And you'd have to know what you wanted, or else you might feel that you're wasting time. He was never like that in person, though. You know, basically, he was the soul of the station. I think that's probably the best way to phrase it. And hopefully that soul will endure, as we are all people here, and sometimes we forget that. Anyway, I'm sure we'll be thinking of Fred in the years to come, and hopefully his time here at the radio station won't ever be forgotten. We'll see you again next week. Take care.
If you know the 4-digit extension number you need, dial it now. You have reached commercial-free WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. The direct line to our on-air studio is 212-209-2900. Our fax number is 212-747-1698. Our main office switchboard is 212-209-2800. Open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. We break for lunch from 1 to 2. Our mailing address is WBAI, 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York City, 10005. Thanks for calling, thanks for listening, thanks for supporting your community station, and stay tuned.
Oh, every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven? You'll find your fortune falling all over town. Be sure that your umbrella is upside down. Trade them for a package of sunshine and flowers. If you want the things you love, you must have showers. a tree.
Don't run under a tree. That's to Fred. Geobold, how I miss Fred. Fred's one of the inspirations for me here at WBAI. When I was just a young pup, I used to listen to Fred and his show, and I would think, wow, you know, he's got a good show here, and that's what BAI stands for. That's why I am here on WBAI, New York 99.5 FM.